कुंजा बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवरदारी जय गोपी जनवाला गिरिवरदारी यशोरानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, which is entitled Pure Devotional Service, A Change of Heart, Text 20. Bile Bhaturu Kramavikramanye. Nashrinvata karna pute narasya Jivasati dar durike vasuta Nacho pakaya tyukraya gataha Ile vatoru krama vikramanye Nashrinvata karna pute narasya Jivasati dar durike vasuta Nacho pagaya tyuragaya gatha Ile batoru krama vikramanye Nashrinvata karna pute narasya Jivasati dar durike vasuta Nacho pagaya turagaya gatha vikramanye nashim vratam karma pute narasya
vasati dar
gure ke vasuta Bile, snake holes. Bata, like. Udukrama, the Lord who acts marvelously. Vikraman, prowess. Ye, all these. Na, never. Shrinvata, heard. Karnapute, the ear holes. Narasya, of the man. Jiva, tongue. Asati, useless. Dardurika, of the frogs. Eva, exactly like that. Sutta, O Sutta Goswami. Na, never. Cha, also. Upagayati, chants loudly. Udagaya, worth singing. Gataha, songs. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and marvelous acts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. Purport. Devotional service to the Lord is rendered by all limbs or parts of the body. It is the transcendental dynamic force of the spirit soul. Therefore, a devotee is engaged 100% in the service of the Lord. One can engage in devotional service when the senses of the body are purified in relation with the Lord, and one can render service to the Lord with the help of all the senses. As such, the senses and the action of the senses are to be considered impure or materialistic as long as they are employed only in sense gratification. The purified senses are engaged not in sense gratification, but in the service of the Lord in toto. The Lord is the supreme with all senses, and the servitor, who is part and parcel of the Lord, also has the same senses. Service to the Lord is the completely purified use of the senses as described in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord imparted instructions with full senses, and Arjuna received them with full senses. And thus there was a perfect exchange of sensible and logical understanding between the master and the disciple. Spiritual understanding is nothing like an electric charge from the master to the disciple, as foolishly claimed by some propaganda mongers. Everything is full of sense and logic, and the exchange of views between the master and disciple is possible only when the reception is submissive and real. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that one should receive the teaching of Lord Chaitanya with intellect and full senses so that one can logically understand the great mission. In the impure state of a living being, the various senses are fully engaged in mundane affairs. If the ear is not engaged in the service of the Lord by hearing about him from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, certainly the holes of the ear will be filled with some rubbish. Therefore, the messages of the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam should be preached all over the world very loudly. That is the duty of a pure devotee who has actually heard about them from the perfect sources. Many want to speak something to others, but because they are not trained to speak on the subject matter of Vedic wisdom, they are all speaking nonsense, and people are receiving them with no sense. There are hundreds and thousands of sources for distributing mundane news of the world, and people of the world are also receiving it. Similarly, the people of the world should be taught to hear the transcendental topics of the Lord and the devotee of the Lord must speak loudly so that they can hear. The frogs loudly croak, with the result that they invite the snakes to eat them. The human tongue is especially given for chanting the Vedic hymns and not for croaking like frogs. The word asati used in this verse is also significant. Asati means a woman who has become a prostitute. A prostitute has no reputation for good womanly qualities. Similarly, the tongue, which is given to the human being for chanting the Vedic hymns, will be considered a prostitute when engaged in chanting some mundane nonsense. Om Agyanta Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karana Sindhu Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So humbly ask for the blessings of those disciples of Srila Prabhupada who are present, as well as all the other devotees. Ask for your blessings that we can say something for the pleasure of Sri Sri Radhe Shyam. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. And may all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 2, Chapter 3, which is entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change of Heart. Text 20. One who has not listened to the messages about the prowess and the marvelous acts of the personality of Godhead has not sung or chanted loudly the worthy songs about the Lord is to be considered to possess ear holes like the holes of snakes and a tongue like the tongue of a frog. So this chapter is entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change of Heart. And at the very beginning of this chapter, Shukadeva Goswami told Parikshit that for every material desire that we have, there's some demigod that can be approached. If you want money, he says you can approach the Vasus. If you want long life, you can approach Ashwini Kumaras. If you want beauty, you can approach the Gandharvas. If you want knowledge, you can approach Lord Shiva. If you want good marital relation, you can approach Uma, the chaste wife of Lord Shiva. So he starts off this chapter by mentioning all these different desires that we have. There's some personality, there's some demigod that can help us with that. It's, you know, that's how it is us for us here in this world too. If you have something that you want, you have to find some personality who's in charge of that, who knows about that. If you want to buy a new watch, You go to someone who's expert in that, who makes that, anything you want. There's some person. So also on a cosmic scale, if there's anything we want, there are actually demigods behind it. But this chapter is called Pure Devotional Service, the Change of Heart. So it's ultimately coming to this point that a real mark of spiritual maturity. What is spiritual maturity? We talk about maturity in life. When people say this person is very mature, it just may mean they're a little more experienced than some mundane activity or some worldly knowledge. But spiritual maturity is also possible. And when that happens, then all these different desires that are alive in our hearts, they start to become less important. Just a little less important. This is a sign of our spiritual advancement. We start, you know, when the desire to achieve outer goals begins to diminish, and the focus shifts to broadening our consciousness, to the connection with God, when that becomes a shift at some point in our life, this shift has to take place for us, and it's gradual. But, you know, like when we're born in this world and we start to grow and we have the desires are very strong, you're a child, just like you're growing physically, you also have certain ambitions and you want to do things and you imitate people and you're after certain goals. But that's also meant to come to a certain point, a limit. This is sometimes called pravritti. The pravritti is just developing yourself, cultivating things, cultivating desires, achieving things. And at some point, it's like an arc. And at some point, at some limit, some experience, or some mercy maybe that comes, then the arc turns, and that's called the nivritti mark. And nivritti also means like returning back to who we truly are, returning back to the source, returning to Krishna. So it is natural in a way when we live in this world that we are filled, in the very beginning we're filled with certain ambitions and desires, but that's not supposed to go up into the moment of death. You know, it's supposed to be a kind of a change, a shift at some point. Prabhupada explains in a purport in this chapter I was reading, he's referring to the word used by Shukadev Goswami, udadadi. Udadadi means when the intelligence becomes more broad, broadened intelligence. When the intelligence becomes more broad, we still may have certain material desires, but now we just approach the Supreme Lord for everything. Even if there's material desires, we go directly to Krishna. So it says, udadadi yajata purusham param. The symptom of this broadening of the intelligence, of the consciousness, is that one now only takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by doing that, we start to associate with devotees. And when that happens, then we get the ultimate benediction from the association of devotees. It's amazing. A devotee, a demigod, if you think of a demigod, they're very large, even like the word deva, divya. You know, they're divine beings. They're radiating. They're glowing. They're very powerful. They're gigantic. They're powerful. But then a devotee, a pure devotee, is so much more powerful, but it's very unassuming. They must be born in some little village or town in this world. Some Vaishnava is born, you know, wherever it may be. And they just look like us. But actually, what they can give is so much more superior to all the demigods with all the boons and all the powers that they have to give so many benedictions. But it's described the ultimate benediction comes from the devotee. What is that? Bhagavati Achala Bhava. This is all from this chapter. Shukadev Goswami says they give spontaneous attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have all these outer goals to begin with, but once we start to hanker for this goal, spontaneous attraction for the Lord, who gives that? Not a demigod, but a devotee. a pure devotee. So by associating with those devotees, this is given as the ultimate benediction. When we have a service attitude towards those devotees, when we hearing for a long time, patiently serving, continuing on in that way, and then this blessing comes of spontaneous attraction. Bhagavati Achala Bhava. And until we get that, until that comes into our heart, then we're all just forced to alternate between being impious and being pious. Sometimes we're impious because of association. We can live a very degraded life. And then also, there's also pious association. Of course, that's better. That helps us get along with others, and it brings some goodness into our life. But again, because of the modes are always operating and moving, then again with time, we'll be influenced in the opposite direction. So long this attraction doesn't awaken for Krishna by the mercy of a devotee, if it doesn't awaken, then we're just constantly alternating between a pious life and impious life. Pious life, impious life. There's a nice verse. The 11th canto. Because we know, as devotees, we know evil and darkness, and we try to avoid that. But also this idea of transcending just mundane piety. That is also necessary. Devotional service is different from that. So there's a verse in the 11th canto, and it says, as long as one is not... As long as one is not satiated by fruit of activity and has not awakened his taste for devotional service by Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, one has to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions. So, of course, it's good to act according to the regulative principles of the Vedic injunctions, but we'll have to continuously do that until we awaken some attraction for the 9 processes of devotional service: hearing, chanting, remembering the Lord. This is different than just piety. This is direct spiritual activity, direct spiritual energy. And we want to associate. When we hear, it's associating with the knowledge power, the chit shakti. There's a shakti to the knowledge. It's not just knowledge that goes in and goes out, but it's another energy. It's a divine energy, the energy of devotional service. And the idea is just to become receptive to it, to associate with that energy. This is hearing, this is chanting, this is worship, this is prayer. You're actually associating with a higher energy. So unless we start to go in that direction and become inspired by that and want more of that, then we'll just have to go on with so many rules and regulations that are contained in the Vedic literature. So there is a distinction between just, pious life. So many churches around here, there are so many churches, there are so many places of worship of God all over the world. Still, it may not be the awakening of devotional service. It may not be the change of heart. The change of heart may not have taken place. You can be going to a church, a temple, a mosque, and listening. Maybe it's a custom, you've inherited that from your family, and you go and you listen, and you do the rituals, and then you go home. It's not guaranteed that this change of heart has taken place. What is that change of heart? That real change of heart can only be given by a pure devotee who's changed their hearts by another pure devotee and goes all the way back to Krishna. So therefore, Shaunaka Rishi, later in this chapter, he talks about the continuous rising and setting of the sun. That so long this change of heart has not taken place, then with every rising and setting of the sun, our life, the lifespan is decreasing to the point of death. And then because the desires, the material desires are still alive, even though the physical body dies, but we have a subtle body as well. If it's still filled with desires in this material world, then the subtle body is like calling forth another physical body, another birth, reincarnation. Because the desires are still alive, but now your physical, this physical body is gone, but you still have desires that are alive. So what does that do? It draws another physical form so that you can fulfill those desires. So unless those desires begin to diminish, and how do they diminish? Not just by our willpower, but by associating with devotees, taking shelter of the divine energy. Gradually this taste should be shifting from spiritual life, from material life to spiritual life, to spiritual activity. So, you can see this, that, you know, the physical body starts to deteriorate. And we may also believe, because, you know, I was with someone recently who was passing away. And talking to him for several months, you know, he was just sharing about his life and his achievements and different desires and things that he still wants to do and so forth. And but gradually, as the time passed, he had cancer and his body began to deteriorate. And the mind also begins to weaken. And it almost looks like you're letting go of desires, the weakening of the body, the weakening of the mind. But this is just a physical, biological thing happening. The mind can no longer be active and alert. The question is, are those desires still there? There's so many other worldly desires. And if they are, even when the physical body dies, you know, the weakening of the life force is there, because those desires are still charged, because we've fed them for so long, then they're still there. They're still longing for their fulfillment. And again, that creates, this is what causes reincarnation. The consciousness is filled with like seeds, you know? It's like you're filled with so many seeds of desires. And they may go for a little while, it may appear that they're dormant. But if they've been fed, if they've been charged up, then again they begin to fructify at a certain time. So we can, Prabhupada says, we don't require that someone gives us some certificate to understand if we're advancing spiritually, but we only have to just look into our hearts and see these things. And if we don't see those things, detachment that's awakening and attraction for the Lord, then we notice that. We're just honest with ourselves, and therefore I need to take more shelter. I need to hear. I need to, when I have a little time throughout the day, instead of putting other things in my ear and other things within my eyes, let me just press play on this little recorder, and let me just hear the transcendental sound vibration, the devotees. This devotee was just sharing this with me the other day, how it really comes down to that, a simple choice. Throughout our day, so many things coming in and out of our minds and our ears, our eyes, all the senses are taking in so much. So we have the opportunity and the choice throughout the day to, even though I don't feel like it right now, let me take this in, I know it'll be good for me. You know, I'm driving around in my car so much around here for the work that I do, and just always have some Prabhupada lecture playing. Let me just, even if I'm distracted, let me have the sound vibration going. And this is going into the ear. Otherwise, Shaunaka Rishi says that we're living. We may be living, but even the trees are living for so long. So what's the value of just living? Trees can live 800 years, 900 years old. Some people say there are trees that are over 2,000 years old. Imagine that tree was standing there when Buddha came. That tree was there when Jesus came. And it's still there, it's still alive, the long life of a tree. So we're living, but Shaunaka Rishi says, what's the value? The trees live much longer. And he says, we're breathing. We may think that's special, that I have breath, but even the blacksmith's bellows, you know, the blacksmith, he has these bellows that to feed oxygen into the fire to make it very strong so that it can bend iron. So you keep supplying oxygen with the bellows, or the harmonium too, right? The harmonium, you keep pumping it. It's like it's breathing in and out. So we might say, well, I breathe, I'm alive, I breathe. But even the blacksmith bellows breathes. Another symptom of being alive, we eat, we reproduce. But Shaunaka Rishi says, even the beasts do that. All the beasts, they also eat, they also reproduce. So his point in saying all of this is not really living. This is not really breathing. This is not really acting. So first, Shaunaka Rishi, he's already criticized that those who don't hear Krishna Katha, he basically says they're like animals if they don't hear Krishna Katha, dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. That verse was, I think, yesterday. Yes. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. Praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. So first, he criticizes them, and then now in text 20 to 24, he will condemn the limbs and the other parts of the body of those who do not serve Krishna. So that's what's happening in today's verse. Now he's going to the different parts of the body and condemning those parts that don't actually engage in service. So he says here, he's talking about the ears and the tongue. These ear holes should not be like snake holes. And Prabhupada explains this. It's nice, you can, if you're inspired today, then you can, Prabhupada speaks directly on this verse 2.3.20 that we're covering today. So you can listen to his lecture on this, which I listened to. And he explains this idea of the snake holes, ear holes becoming like snake holes. In the agricultural field, some creatures will come there to eat from the field, and then they dig themselves a little hole just to rest. They just stay there because the food supply is great. So they make some little home, they make a hole, and they just sit there and take their rest or wait, come back out, eat some more, go back into the hole. But actually, those holes are just inviting the snake to come. So the snake also is there in the field and sees the hole, and it goes right into the hole, eats. Prabhupada says the rat, the mice that are there may eat, and then just the snake just rests there comfortably. And then whenever that snake sees another hole, he knows this is a meal and goes there. So in the same way, these ear holes should not be like snake holes, that we're actually, by what we hear, is also like an invitation for death to come. Death is coming. We're taking in so much mundane knowledge and information. It's not actually liberating knowledge. It's not liberating us in any way. It's just filling the ear, filling the ear. So, by filling the ear with all this knowledge and information, there's a verse in the Bible that says, one who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Because it becomes a burden if it's not transcendental knowledge. We want to know so many things, and there's so much information we can get right immediately on our phone. All the information is there, filling our minds. And if we fill our ears, then what's the next stage? Is that it comes out of us. It goes in the ears and comes out through the mouth, the tongue, what we speak. You know, whatever comes into the ears, eventually we talk about that, we believe that. This is how we all become brainwashed, by birth. Because so much, by hearing so much, again, from people, from television, from it's getting in there, and we just start to, you know, believe it all and accept it all. So Prabhupada liked this word, brainwash. And it's a criticism, right? That people criticize that all of you have been brainwashed by Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is a very good word, brainwash. We have washed the brain. The brain was so dirty, and now it is being washed. So it's usually not meant in that positive sense, but Prabhupada liked that term, brainwash. It's exactly what needs to happen. Some people criticize religious people because they're always preaching. And they're always forcing and preaching, but actually that is happening everywhere in the world as soon as we're born. Everybody is preaching to us. You know, anything you hear, anything you listen to, it's preaching. It's some getting inside of you, shaping you, changing you. So it's not just that religious people are preaching. Everybody's preaching. So we shouldn't be shy to share and to give and to preach, because after all, it's already been done. The brainwashing has already taken place, and we're hoping to now put something true over that covering. So, yeah, so in through the years, and then we speak it out. We have a tongue. We have a tongue for speaking, vibrating. But if we're just speaking whatever we received in through mundane knowledge, if we speak it out, then that speaking is like the croaking of a frog. That's what's mentioned here. The frog is also croaking, especially around here. I just live a few minutes away. Once it rains hard and there's some puddles, it sounds like there's millions of frogs outside. I mean, there are. Suddenly, in just a short time, frogs croaking, croaking. And again, this is doing what? That kind of singing, it's called here in this verse. They're singing. They're croaking. But the snake hears. Again, the snake. The snake sometimes is a symbol of death. So the snake hears that and comes directly to where the frog is, and again, has another meal. So both these examples are talking about the snake. The invitation. Invitation. Prabhupada says in his class on this verse that we're also like this in the same way we're inviting Yamaraj to come. By what we hear, by what we speak, we're calling forth Yamaraj. Yamaraj, if we can restrain, Yama means restraint. You know, like in the Yoga Sutras, we have the Yamas and the Niyamas. There's certain things you should avoid, certain restraints, and then certain things you should do and cultivate. So Yamaraj, he's the punisher. He also restrains the living being. So if we don't restrain ourselves, if we don't try to overcome, we're not on the path of overcoming certain forms of sense gratification that just continue to cover us. If we don't restrain ourselves, then Yamaraj has to restrain us. But if we have this desire, at least a desire for self-discipline through hearing, through absorbing the senses and Krishna consciousness and Krishna conscious activities, this is what helps us overcome the lower tastes, the lower desires. But if that's never done, then another being has to take care of it. You know, it's like here, if you're a good citizen and you follow all the rules, you're fine. Life will be okay. But if you break the rules and if you commit crimes, then someone else has to take care of you. Then you have to be put in prison, and then you're watched by so many people and there are so many restrictions. So it's like that. If we don't restrict ourselves to some degree, then another being has to restrict. So what should we do? The ears are a problem. The tongue is a problem. So should we just close our ears and close our mouth? But we know that's not our process. Sarvapadi vinir maktam tatparat vena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. So this verse nicely explains that all the senses, Prabhupada emphasizes this in the purport, all the senses should be engaged in Krishna consciousness. By doing that, gradually, two things happen. You know, the perfect example for engaging the senses, every sense could be nicely engaged in Krishna service. A nice example from Bhagavatam is Ambarish Maharaj. The mind he engages, the ears by hearing Krishna Katha, the eyes by looking at the deities, the smell, smelling Tulsi, smelling the incense offered to the Lord. Taste by tasting prasadam. Touch by touching the bodies of devotees. So, beautiful verse in the ninth canto, Ambarish, is the example where every sense, everything we have, can be connected to the Lord. And by doing so, Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam Tatparatvena Nirmalam. Two things happen by doing so. All these false designations that we identify with start to go away. And I'm a man, woman, I'm white, I'm black, I'm American, I'm Indian, whatever it is, all those things start to, we lose the identification. And then one identification is behind all of that, one true identification, that I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. A shift in identification, what we identify with. We truly embrace that identity. So this starts to happen as we engage our senses, employ our senses in the service of the Lord. And the other thing that happens, the senses become purified. They return to their original nature and purpose. The senses right now are covered. It's like a material covering over the pure spiritual senses. But by engaging, by using the senses in service, they start to retain their original function. And the senses, and if they're in their true state, their original state, they spontaneously serve the Lord. It's enjoyed. It's the enjoyment of the soul in relation to the Lord. But again, if the senses are just for taking pleasure for myself, taking for my own pleasure, then what is that doing? It's actually weakening the senses. It's weakening the life force in our bodies. And it's strengthening the false ego. Because the senses, they have their sense objects. And when the senses associate with the sense objects, in a sense, it's strengthening the identity with the body. You know, like when you really get some pleasure on the tongue, just for yourself. Then the identification with the body becomes stronger. Yes, the tongue is enjoying. I want more of this. It goes away. I want it again. But we're strengthening the false self. That's what we do. There's a false self and there's a real self. And by that kind of taking in the senses for my own self, we're strengthening the wrong person. The false personality. We're feeding it, strengthening it. But it should actually be weakening, and there should be a shift into the real self. And food for the real self. How do you strengthen the real self? It is by Krishna conscious activities, but because we're so identified with the material body, we don't experience the taste always. But it's a gradually that taste is shifting. When we start to find a little pleasure, all of you wouldn't be here if there's not something that's attracting, that there's some kind of taste. That's the most sacred thing that we have. It means an attraction. It means the soul is finally, again, wanting to return to the Lord. It's all these senses, the mind and the senses, everything has to be returned to the Lord. Krishna consciousness means returning our consciousness to the Lord. And gradually there will be an attraction that will develop. And once that attraction develops, that's the greatest benediction above all the other material goals and desires, just the attraction to spontaneously serve Krishna. So this chapter, again, just concluding, pure devotional service, the change of heart. That change of heart will come through our association with the devotee. And ultimately, this change of heart means that it's no longer about my happiness. But what I do and how I act and what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling is all to give the Lord happiness. That's the simple definition of Krishna consciousness. Once our consciousness thinks in this way, how to give the Lord happiness? We can practice this. We can try this today. You know, whatever we're doing. Let me act in such a way that I'm pleasing the Lord. I have to eat. I have to do so many practical things. Well, before I eat this, let me offer to the Lord. May He be pleased. And then I enjoy the remnants. That idea of prashadam, about offering and enjoying the remnants, that's like a principle for our whole lives, because if we offer first to the Lord, then the Lord will also provide and give us what we need, and the senses can even be satisfied. It's not that we have to totally refrain and just suffer, give all happiness to the Lord, and myself, I'm becoming more and more morose because I have no enjoyment. But it's the Lord first, and that principle of prashadam, and then the remnants are there left for you to also enjoy. Krishna gives that back. He gives it to you. He enjoys it. Mystically, he eats the prashadam, and then you can also eat it. He allows for that. So in the same way, whatever we're doing in life, an activity that's offered, and then Krishna takes care of us. We have a nice life, you know, we have nice philosophy, we come together with devotees, we have nice friendships, we're eating nicely, we sing and we dance. This is a symptom of happiness, of joy. You know, very simple things that we do, but it's really very fulfilling, very nice, very sweet. So Krishna's giving the remnants because we're putting Him first, He's also giving. That's how you enjoy. That's how you truly enjoy. But if we take Krishna out and it's all about me taking and enjoying, that actually inside we're becoming empty. And we need more of that thing to fill myself up so I can pretend I'm not empty. I'm actually empty if I'm selfish. But if I keep just filling it, I get a little relief and I feel like everything's okay. But if I try to refrain, I'll see that I'm actually existentially empty. If I just stop for a few days, I'll see the emptiness that's there. If I keep filling, I think I'm okay. But this shift, that the happiness of the Lord, let me try to apply that practically in my life. Let me do something today, let me do something. Just like right now we're hearing Bhagavatam together. This is pleasing to the Lord. And then we can also get the results of that when the Lord is pleased with our effort, our sincerity. So we'll stop here for this few minutes for any thoughts, comments, questions. Yes, Prabhu, why don't you go to Prabhu? Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah, so we're mentioning in the beginning of the lecture also that we have to perform rules and regulations in the beginning especially, and it may seem like, well, just like you use a ladder at some point when you get to the top and then you no longer need the ladder. So in the same way, Panchagoda Prabhu is asking this question for our benefit. Is it also like that in spiritual life, that we follow so many rules and regulations and then eventually we're beyond all that, we can kind of give that up and then we just have maybe some, you know, we do what we want in spiritual life. Rupa Goswami explains that, he talks about the stage of Vaidhi Bhakti, where the impetus to perform devotional service is coming from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And he talks about Rag Bhakti, where the inspiration, the impetus is actually coming from within yourself. But either way, when one comes to the level of Rag and the inspiration now is coming from within and not just because of trying to follow because I'm told to do so, or this person or this source says to do so, the inspiration is coming from within, but even that person continues to follow all of the rules and regulations, but the quality is different for that person. So it's not that they abandon the process or previous things that they did. They still continue on. But now it is coming from within. It is coming from an inner inspiration rather than only coming from the outside source. Of course, the interesting thing is Vaidhi Bhakti, even when we're following out of duty, and following because the spiritual master says so. Vaidhi Bhakti doesn't have to become Rag Bhakti. You can also become perfect in Vaidhi Bhakti and be in Vaikuntha. So even this thing of following because the authority says to do so, the Shastra is saying this, so I try. You know, this is the stage, you know, that most of us are at. And this can also become perfected. And one attains the spiritual world. So it doesn't have to eventually turn into this rag that's totally spontaneous. But Lord Chaitanya has said in Chaitanya Charitamrita that the gift that he's really come to give is this spontaneous attraction. So it is a blessing and a gift given by our acharyas that this spontaneous attraction will awaken. Anyway, I know I mentioned a couple different things, but to your question that even in a stage of spontaneous attraction, one continues all the rules and regulations that we've been given by Srila Prabhupada. It's just that the quality, it looks the same. We maybe from an outside we cannot see the difference, somebody who's acting this way or that. We shouldn't see the difference. It should be so, we should be so careful that even if a spontaneous attraction awakens, that we do everything as we've always done, but internally we may experience it differently. So, yes, we will. Yes, Mati.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I'm a new devotee and I'm still trying to understand a lot of things. You said desires, right? That's a question I've been asking. Where do these desires come from? How do they pop into our minds and our hearts?
The question was, where do these desires, she's saying, where do these desires come from? Yes, so the desires, it's like when we go back to the original, go back far into our history, we see at some point the living being turns away from Krishna because the living being wants to sort of play the role of Krishna. We want to be God in some way. We want to imitate, we want to be the enjoyer, we want to be the controller. And because that's impossible, then we have to be placed under illusion where we pretend to do that. And there's an illusion that we're the controllers and the enjoyers. So there's a way in which the soul surrenders to that illusion. So we've surrendered to that illusion. And within that field of illusion, there are the modes of nature that are moving and acting. And because we're surrendered to that field of illusion, then however the modes move and act, they get inside of us, different desires. You know, they come through people. You know, so if you're associating with people who have all kinds of materialistic desires, then by you, again, now we're in a state of surrender to this, so we're already open to it. We're open to it. But now this desire gets into me. Why this one? Because of what I've associated with, because of the people around me, because of the environment, this particular desire gets inside of me and I identify with it and I think it's mine. So these desires are not our desires, but we've acquired them from our association with the modes of nature. You know, and so now here we are in this field of illusion, very surrendered to it. Whatever comes in just gets in. But there's also pure devotees walking in this field. And they're giving something else. And so if we associate with them, they're provoking the deepest desire in the heart, which is to love God and serve God. And so that desire starts to awaken. And then there's a competition within our heart. For all these little desires that have been acquired, but this other desire that's starting to arise by the mercy of a devotee that actually wants to surrender to Krishna, return to Krishna. So the desires are coming from the influence of the modes that we have put ourselves under. So once we desire, I don't want to be under these modes anymore. I want to come under the shelter, the daivi shakti, the divine energy. Once that change takes place, we'll find spiritual desires are also already there. They can be reawakened. Yes, Mataji, and then we'll Pran Govind Prabhu. There's one more comment or question.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much. I was particularly struck by the point you made about it being a gradual process, and I just thought of how a child grows. Mm. I mean, I've seen children that were this girl's age, and now they have children that age or older. And it's like, how did that even happen? Mm. You know, I feel the same. But I was reading last night with a couple of friends. We began to read the Lilamrita again, and we began at the introduction. So the first volume is Prabhupada's 69 years in India, and Satsrup Maharaj was writing that before he came, there were practically no devotees, no temples in the West, and it went on like that, and I just looked around. I said, look around. You know, in our homes, on every wall, there's pictures of Krishna. Everyone, you know, we come here, we see, my God, the deities are so gorgeously dressed. You know, they're offered such nice things. And in our home, we're offering also and taking the remnants. And imperceptibly, our lives have been transformed. And sure, nowhere near the goal of, you know, Radha Bhakti and spontaneously serving Krishna in the mood of the Brijvasis, but so much has changed. So when you were reading the verse today, somehow today I was hearing, but we're so fortunate that our ear holes have been hearing from the pure devotee, yeah, and our tongues have been trying to chant Krishna's name, and there's so many people in the world who've never heard, mm, and it's so wonderful to hear, like the other day Mukhya was reading a book distribution story where the angry, drunken, born-again Christian was disrupting, and after five different episodes of encountering this person, you know, he finally got a book, he finally read it, he came back, he said, I stopped my drinking, this book is so good, what else do you have, and then, can I have a muffin? You know, it's like this, the transformation is always possible.
Yeah.
And it just, yeah, I just wanted to say from that angle.
Beautiful, thank you. Yeah, this it's so true. We're already so blessed. There's an inclination that's happening already by Prabhupada's mercy. And we just have to be satisfied and happy with that and grateful and continue on. Thank you. Prabhupada.
There is a verse in Chaitanya Bhagavata. By the way, very nice class. I really love your strategy, mm, where you are, where you want to take us, mm, and what you give. Very nice. Mm-hmm. It says, Atma sukha ichchai jeev koti bancha kare, jai Krishna ichcha kare, sei phal dhare. Means the essence of that free will and desire are eternal component of soul structure. Mm. It's inseparable. Mm. But of course, it filters through in the material world through the mind and ego, where you explain very nicely. Mm. My, just takeaway from your class, someone may say, you emphasize pure devotees' association is the most important. Until purity would intervene or something like that, it is not. But then someone may say, Prabhupada travel all over the world, there's millions of people. What is your definition of association means? Mm. I mean, they saw here, there. So that's one way to look at it. And another way you also mentioned, you may go to church, synagogue, I don't know, you mentioned the synagogue, but anyway, temple or mosque, mm, but if the transformation did not take place, it's not really successful, or purpose is not served. Mm. So if somebody put two together, okay, pure devotee is there, and his association is required, and going to church is not going to be fructified unless pure devotee intervention, what is the missing point in between? Mm. So I was meditating. You gave a very nice. Mm. I was meditating also Bhagavad Gita 6.8. Mm. It says, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Kutastha Vijitendriya Jukta Iti Uchyate Yogi. The acquiring knowledge, if I do not apply, that realization will never take place. So applying, of course there is a process, applying will purify. Purify means it will direct our senses towards Krishna, whether through thinking or feeling or whatever the composition is. Then purification will give us satisfaction. Are you happy serving Krishna? If you are not happy, then it's not working. There should not be complaint from devotee, at least those who have accepted this. Because happiness means they are applying this philosophy, they are practicing. Yesterday one devotee asked a question that impersonalist satisfaction and devotee's satisfaction, what's the difference? Both coming to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. After that we may not discuss, because they don't discuss, we discuss. But up to that we are on the same route, it seems like. Say yes, because once a devotee in the Brahma-Bhuta platform, actually every devotee in our society, they should be completely satisfied. And if they are not satisfied, they are acquiring knowledge, it becomes a burden. If they don't apply, it will become a burden, and actually it can push our pride or offensive nature. Why? I'm not invited to speak. I know better philosophy than Ganesh. This thing will bother. I see within me. I mean, it's like a... So therefore, it is a request. I mean, Prabhupada gave a nice purport on that. That whatever we acquire, we hear, must think like, how can I apply this? Ganesham Prabhu nicely explained. How can I, am I doing this? This reflection should be there. And if we don't reflect, the assimilation will never take place. So we'll stay hungry. It's not a good idea to stay hungry in spiritual life. I mean, we should be greedy for spiritual advancement, but if we are not satisfied, then it's not really working. It's very important, I thought.
Such a good point. That sincerity to apply, the sincerity to just apply, like that's the key factor, right? The sincerity to just, let me apply, let me try this, let me... Otherwise, like you're saying, it becomes like it's in there in the brain, and it's not digested. It's like you're eating food without digesting it, but the application begins to digest, and then you can have the nourishment, you can have the health, you can have the satisfaction. Thank you, Prabhu. I appreciate how you bring it to that point of we always leave with something and not just hear, but we take it and we... That little desire, that let me try to apply this, it makes all the difference.
Hey, so the question there about, you know, how do we get involved in this a little bit? You know, the thought that came to me is we seek it out in one sense. We want the alternative desire. I mean, we're just going through it. You know, and then you get the false ego, which, I mean, we want that on some level, you know, and then from a false ego, then we're off to the races. And then we identify with various modes of false ego and the three modes facilitate. So it's not like in one sense, either we're Vishnu-Tatva and controlling it, or we're just, you know, rock. You know, but, you know, it's like once you get immersed, it's like then there's ramifications that expand or restrict your faculties. But I think, as Pran says, at the core, I mean, it might be very covered over now, but that full freedom is there, and, you know, that's what we're uncovering, perhaps, is one way to look at it.
Thank you. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.